Welcome to the Pretty Deadly Podcast. I'm Susie Colick, the founder of Pretty Deadly Self-Defense, a self-defense program for women I developed based on my experiences as a violent crime survivor and my 24 years of training in the Japanese art of ninjutsu. In this episode, I'm going to talk about my experiences training for and running a marathon and how that relates to self-defense. But before I go on, if you are in the UK and you're looking for accessible, easy to remember, effective self-defense, our next 5-week course kicks off in High Wycombe in Buckinghamshire on April 4th. It's from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. every Wednesday at the Wycombe Arts Center and is led by Pretty Deadly certified self-defense trainer, Jennifer Murray. You might know her around town as Jennifer of Zumba or Jennifer of RockFit, but she's also Jennifer of Pretty Deadly. You can sign up at our website, prettydeadlyselfdefense.com. Just click on the Find a Class button, or you can go directly to the Wycombe Arts Center website at wycombeartscenter.com and just check under events. Okay, back to our episode. So in 2005, I decided to run a marathon. I was friends with someone back then who had run the Honolulu Marathon, and I decided to go to Honolulu to support them during the race. I waited at the finish line for my friend to cross, and while I was waiting, I saw all of these runners cross the finish line, and the looks on their faces and the attitudes of their bodies was so interesting to me. I thought, I wonder what that feels like to cross a finish line, because in martial arts, there is no finish line. In martial arts, you can get your black belt, you can get your first dan, second dan, third dan, ninth dan. Some martial arts have like 23 dans. The thing is that it's a never-ending process of learning and discovery and connection to your body and your mind. And often there's a spiritual aspect to it, depending on, well, in all arts, but however it works out for you. At any rate, the point is there's no finish line to cross. There may be, for individual practitioners, a point in a particular style where they feel they are no longer getting any joy or discovering any new. It's not anything new. It's not fitting with their outlook anymore. And so they move on to another style. There's some people who want to take kind of a quick but deep dive into different styles and just collect a bunch of different experiences. Also fantastic. But going back to the original point, there is no actual finish line in any martial art in the world. So I wanted to know, what does it feel like to cross a finish line? Now, I'm not a runner. I hated running in PE classes. Mostly those were about sprints, though, and that's what I really, really don't like to do. I wasn't really sure I could do it, but I wanted to give it a try. So I got the book Marathon and I started training. It was difficult. I had to correct my form. Once I was able to do that, it was easier. I was training in Los Angeles at the time, but I was training for the Stockholm Marathon simply because I had read that that was the flattest and a really good marathon to run for beginners. My training was surprising to me because what I discovered was that my body actually responded really well to long distance running. So as I did the full like 6-month training before the marathon, including running the distance of the marathon about a month before the actual race, just to get my body in tune for that. And the closer that I got to the actual race, the less support I received from the people around me. My friends at that time threw me a bon voyage dinner, as I obviously had to fly to Stockholm to run the race. And it was lovely. And I was so touched. But at the end of the dinner, as I was leaving, they said, remember, it's not about finishing. It's the fact that you tried. And I was really gutted that they didn't believe I was actually going to finish the race. Now, the Stockholm Marathon has a finish time of 6 hours, which is why I chose it. I wanted to make sure that there was a cutoff time in order to be counted among the finishers of the race. So I felt like maybe they believed that I wasn't going to finish it in 6 hours. But either, whatever the reason was, it was a devastating feeling. And I got the same message from my own dad. Pretty much nobody believed that I was going to be able to finish that race. I did finish it. I ran it in 5 hours and 28 minutes. I have my certificate. It was done. I was exhausted. It was very rewarding. I've never felt anything like that since. It's a different feeling that I had when I achieved my black belts and the different things that I've accomplished in my life. It's a very unique feeling, and I can understand why people become addicted to running marathons, because it's really, you get so in touch with your body and you're so in tune with the way that everything works. And then that euphoria that comes is definitely worth it. I get it. Although I confess, I have actually never run a marathon again. That's not because I don't like running marathons. I guess I just don't like it enough to have done that over continuing with my martial arts training, for example. But why am I talking about this? I'm talking about this because of the lack of support that I received and the way that women are often perceived in athletics and sports and fitness in general, which is related to the way women are perceived on the streets and in life. Hear me out before you start rolling your eyes. In 1966, in the United States, it was believed that women did not have the stamina to run the length of a marathon. This was proved incorrect by women who did run marathons, whether officially or unofficially, but it wasn't until the 1970s that women were actually allowed to run marathons. These beliefs still persist today. Serena Williams, for example, is arguably the greatest tennis player among men and women of all time, and yet she is not seen that way by journalists and officials. Andrew Murray has very famously, there's a very famous clip of him pointing out to a journalist that she has actually won all of the titles and is the only tennis player to ever do that. I have a body that does not look athletic. It does not look like I'm into sports. And this is where all of this comes from, this perception of the female body. My female body, especially when I was younger, would be considered very curvy. The sort of modern day stereotype of what is considered attractive to men. Right now, it's still curvy, although I have to say there's generally only one curve and it's a circle, and that's my postmenopausal belly. But nonetheless, even now, people don't believe that I am athletic or sporty or that I do anything in fitness. When I teach fitness or I teach self-defense or martial arts, people are often surprised that they have a hard time keeping up with me because I don't look according to their perception of fitness. I had already been training in martial arts for a few years when I ran that marathon. I wanted to run the marathon in 2005, and I ran the actual marathon in 2006. So I started my training in January 2006, and then I ran it at the end of May, beginning of June, whenever it was, right before Sweden's National Swedish Day in 2006. So by that time, I had already been training in martial arts for 6 years. And I was also at the same time preparing for my Shodan test, my first level black belt test. Not getting that kind of support was devastating to me. And it's devastating to a lot of women who are discouraged from taking care of their own health or from enjoying their own fitness, simply because people take a look at women and say, obviously, you're not an athletic person or a sporty person or somebody who's into fitness, because you don't look like someone who can run or someone who can lift weights or someone who can swim. I have been athletic my entire life. When I was in my 20s in New York, I mostly just walked everywhere, but I also was an avid swimmer. When I moved to Los Angeles, I started martial arts. I played tennis. I ran a marathon. I played on a women's only, very casual soccer team, league thing. I don't know what we were doing. We were playing some form of soccer. It was very entertaining. I joined CrossFit. I'm always moving. And yet when people look at me, they believe that I am not athletic or sporty or even fit. And the reason that I'm talking about this is because a lot of people look at women and girls and they believe that there is no physical aspect to their being in the sense of being able to be connected to their bodies and move. And this is one of the many reasons that we are targeted for violence. When women and girls enter martial arts or self-defense, I'm going to say specifically these two areas, I've seen them being treated with kid gloves. This whole like, oh, I know this is going to be hard for you. We have to be delicate because your bones are more fragile or brittle or whatever it is, which may be true of older women who might experience osteoporosis, but is not true of young girls, any more so than it is true of young boys of the same age. I've heard of martial arts instructors tell women that they should only do a technique on one side and not the other because women are predominantly right-handed or left-handed, which is a weird thing to say. I've seen people withhold training because they don't believe that women can take a punch, because they don't believe that women can take the pain. And I see women believe this about themselves, and I'm not encouraging anybody to go out and experience pain for the sake of it, unless you happen to be a masochist and that's your thing, then cool, go ahead. But for most of us, it's the idea, we're so socialized to believe that we cannot endure these things, that we don't even try. And these are some of the barriers that I think come up for women and for girls in learning basic self-defense. The idea that it's so complicated and it's so tough and powerful and strong. And yes, if you can withstand it, if you can run that gauntlet, if you can take a punch 1,000 times or whatever people's criteria are, then yeah, you can learn self-defense, you can learn martial arts. But this is just nonsense. One of the things that I've been really proud about observing in Pretty Deadly courses is when women understand that they can actually receive a punch. And I don't mean without protection. I mean that they can be holding a pad and somebody can punch them and they survive. And they often look shocked themselves. Sometimes, yes, they complain, oh, the kick pad is tearing up my elbow a little bit in elbow strikes. Yeah, it might hurt a little bit. You might get a little bit bruised up. This is a self-defense class. This is a martial arts class. These are the things that you've signed up for. This is going to happen. But that simple explanation is usually all it takes for people to say, okay, great, I can do it. Anyway, the prevailing belief that girls and women can't do these things is why we're targeted for violence. And it's why when we're training with women who are new to martial arts or new to self-defense, that we can waste a lot of time with people who are so busy avoiding getting hit because they're so afraid of being hit that it cuts into the time that they need to learn techniques and new ideas and this kind of body literacy. One of the things that we do in Pretty Deadly classes is super slow motion punches to the face, not only so that people can understand what it feels like to absorb, we're actually teaching people how to absorb a punch, but also so that people can understand what it feels like to have a fist on your face and what it feels like to have someone's face on your fist. Again, a lot of the reasons that it can be challenging to teach girls and women these things is because we don't grow up with these kinds of play fighting and making the same kind of contact that boys do when they are learning these things in the world. But it doesn't take that long to teach us. It doesn't take us that long to get past that socialization so that we can get down to the business of training and just learn some self-defense. You have been listening to the Pretty Deadly Podcast. You can learn more about who we are and what we do and how to find a Pretty Deadly course near you by visiting our website at prettydeadlyselfdefense.com. And if you're a fitness or martial arts pro and you'd like to enhance your instructor skills, our certification programs are open for enrollment and you can find them on our website at prettydeadlypro.com. This podcast is produced by Singe Network for Pretty Deadly, recorded in Berlin, and our original music is the track Icarus Wish by Berlin band Dead Centuries, used with permission of the artist.